We could survive that. We could survive that. We could survive.
Hi, how are you? And welcome to We Could Survive That, your survival guide to the movies. I'm Jack, and today I'm joined by a man who loves coin collecting. It's Chris.
I actually have a collection of 50 pence coins with all different little drawings and designs on them and stuff. Some Olympic ones, some Beatrix Potter ones on there as well. Some other cool ones. I like the look of them. So actually, I do enjoy a little bit of coin collecting on the side.
Ah, so you're an expert in what we're about to talk about today then, Chris. An avid coin collector. Who would have thought coin collecting could have been this extreme, Chris?
I would have thought this. I've seen plenty of other movies where coins always show up and lead to bigger and grander things. What I've not seen is a movie that seems to jumps around a lot, can't focus on one singular plot and changes themes quite a lot throughout. It's a bit of a roller coaster, this film, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, but in a good way though, Chris. We're talking about Sahara from 2005, which is a film that I watched in cinemas in 2005 for my birthday, Chris. This was my birthday film in 2005, and coincidentally enough, Chris, we're recording on my birthday today, so if everybody in the audience sing happy birthday to me, I'll leave in like 10 seconds of quiet so you can all do that and you don't miss anything whilst you're singing to me. You think that's fair, Chris? You don't think that's too egotistical of me?
No, I think that's perfectly fair. In fact, you should probably drop your email address on there so people can send you in various electronic gifts and stuff as well.
True. I won't give my actual email address because that seems like a bad idea, but we could survive that at gmail.com. Send me birthday cards. That's good fun. But no, we're talking about Sahara today, but because of that, because I wanted to. There's never any rhyme or reason for why we pick films, Chris, and this is one of those times where it's come out of the blue. Sahara is underappreciated, I would say. Maybe forgotten. A hidden gem, in my opinion, at least. Archaeologists will dig this up in a ironclad warship one day and find the DVD of it and watch it and enjoy it, I feel. But yeah, that's my own personal opinion. And maybe I'm looking at this through rose-tinted spectacles. But yeah, there's a lot going on in this film. It's directed, Chris, by Breck Eisner, who I didn't think I'd seen any of his other films, but then I looked on his IMDb page, Chris, and he directed The Last Witch Hunter, which is not a good film.
Oh, I love that film.
Oh, no, it's bad.
It's awesome. It's one of those films that's bad, but good, you know. I shouldn't like it, but I can't help but like it. I'm a sucker for terrible films like that.
No, that's not a good film. I've put in my notes boo next to The Last Witch Hunter, so that tells you everything you need to know about that. Matthew McConaughey is in this as Dirk Pitt. Steve Zahn is in it as his buddy Al. Penelope Cruz as Eva, and a bunch of other people that have gone on to do bigger and better things. Chris, this film is based on a series of books by Clive Cussler, who, during development of this film, sued the movie studio for being cut out of the writing process, and after a prolonged legal battle, he won a whole bunch of money, Chris.
Well, that's fair enough. If you're adapting a film that's based on a book, then the author should be included as a writing credit, or they should be acknowledged based on the novel by so-and-so or whatever.
Yeah, and this film's production woes don't stop there. The film blew out budget-wise, went massively over budget, to the point that it filmed there's supposed to be a plane crash scene in here that they filmed and cost, I think, around $2 million, but that scene was never included in the finished film. So a lot of money was spent on this film that should have been like mid-budget at best, and it did not perform too well at the box office. It did not make its money back, sadly.
Is that because the film didn't know how to market itself? Because I'm going to be honest, I'd never heard, maybe very vaguely in passing, never really heard of this film. And then you said about it, and I was like, the hell is this film? I had a look at it. That's why I had to message you. I was like, which one we're doing? Because there's other Sahara movies and Matthew McConaughey. I was like, oh, okay, fair enough. And I watched the trailer, and me and my girlfriend, we both watched the trailer together. We looked at each other, and I was like, well, this looks shit. And she agreed with me, and she decided not to watch the film as a result. So I went in and watched it on my own. What I will say, the trailer did not do the film justice. The film was much better than what the trailer showed out to be. However, I just assumed I was watching a film about some guys looking for a a ship in the Sahara, but, and that's what it sort of starts out as. And then it jumps around. And then at one point, I said out loud, I was like, I'm watching a James Bond film here. We're in an evil villain's lair, and this has become a James Bond film. This is no longer an Indiana Jones archaeology type movie or anything. And then another point, I'm watching a film thinking, this is now like a mystery illness film or something like the containment movie with like Lawrence Fishburne in it. We've got WHO doctors investigating this deadly disease. So the film jumps around a lot. And I'm wondering if that's maybe when it was marketed, people didn't really know what they were getting into. Maybe that's why it performed so badly.
Maybe. See, it's got a lot of stuff going on in it, but I think it tends to balance everything out fairly well. I don't know whether you feel the same about it. You probably don't, given the tone that you're saying this with, but I feel it balances out fairly well.
I don't know. I just wanted to set out a one story, because I was enjoying the things. It opens up in the last remaining days of the American Civil War, and we've got this ironclad ship, and it drifts off into the fog, and it's all mysterious, and that was quite cool. And then we jump to present day, and then, like I said, it goes through all these different stories. So I'm not saying none of them were bad, and I can obviously, there's a bigger picture on how they all connect and stuff. Just this film was not what I thought it was going to be. And was the film was all right. I enjoyed the film. I'm in no rush to go back and watch it again, certainly. But I would say it wasn't a bad film. I did enjoy it much more than, like I said, what I thought the trailer was made out to be.
Yeah, this is one of those films that I like, because you think like the main premise is going to be these two treasure hunter guys going after some gold, some southern gold, Chris. But it's not. The actual main plot is Penelope Cruz's character Eva trying to figure out what this illness is, and Dirk and Al just so happen to walk into her film and just sort everything out by themselves. So I love that kind of dynamic where, okay, it's like usually a Mad Max film. That's like the best example of one of these things that I can find, is like just a couple of guys wander into somebody else's film, and sometimes that's what you need, two treasure hunters with, you know, Navy training, just to go in, ruffle some feathers, beat up some bad guys, and, you know, do some James Bond stuff. The score in this is very good, and there are trumpets in this that would not be out of place in a James Bond film. So if that's, like, your connection to Bond, that's good. Because that is excellent, Chris.
My connection to Bond is when they end up in the lair of the evil French villain. It's this is the French guy from the Matrix films, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm very aware it's the French guy from the Matrix film. He got out of the Matrix, Chris, and he's doing industrial toxic waste disposal, Chris.
Well, I've never seen this guy in anything else other than the Matrix. Well, it's nothing that comes to mind, so I was surprised to see him. But he's a classic Bond villain. Like you said, he's doing illegal dumping. He's working with a warlord that's taken over another country and stuff, and he's doing all shady things, and there's all secret stuff going on. It got very Bondy at one point, which I didn't mind, to be fair.
That was
all right. And I just wish we could just, it jumped around too much between these different themes. I feel like it just, I wanted it to settle on one, and because it got to the point where they're at the end and they're doing the desert chase from the big Bond villain, and then he's got away, and then there's the warlord chasing them, and then we circle back round to this ironclad warship, which I'd sort of forgotten about.
Well, I quite like that it takes a back seat, because then you're like, oh yeah, this is there, and they're using their knowledge of the environment and history to their advantage. And Matthew McConaughey is like, yeah, we can wait them out because this bad boy is solid steel, and we're not going to be shot at. And then the helicopter just blows on through this old rusty ship from like 200, 300 years ago, and they're like, shit, this was not a good plan. And it wasn't. I like that all of their plans are like on the fly and shouldn't work, but they sometimes do. And like their callbacks to plans are like, oh yeah, we'll do a Panama, and like, oh great, this worked last time, and like, no it did not. It did not work last time. I like that. That's a part of the reason I do like this film, is like the chemistry between McConaughey and Zahn. Their delivery and their line reading isn't like they're reading off a script. It genuinely feels like they're just two mates dicking around, like the way they interact. And, you know, lots of other films try and do that buddy cop sort of thing, friends for life. And the chemistry doesn't always work so well. But it's on point here, and I'm sad that we haven't, you know, got more of these guys teaming up. No, it doesn't even have to be in an action film. I just, you know, they've got so much chemistry that I'd just like to see them just doing anything, because yeah, this was a good pairing.
The chemistry might be just specific between the characters they're playing. It might not work so well in other films, and even though there's a lot of books that they could do with this franchise, I'm guessing because this film went so over budget and lost so much money, and it's like one of the biggest box office bombs of all time in terms of how much money it lost. We're not going to get any more of these anytime soon.
No, and I don't think if you were to try and like do a sequel to this, Matthew McConaughey will be a lot more expensive now than he was back then, because 2005, I think he was just getting off the ground. I think he was breaking out of he's the rom-com guy mold. I did entertain myself by having a look at some of the one-star reviews of this, and a lot of them were like targeting like Matthew McConaughey, like, oh, go back to rom-coms and stuff, man, stop trying to be an action guy. But he works as an action guy. Steve Zahn also works as an action guy when he's doing the shootout thing and he's like checking the AK-47 that he's just picked up. That's all good. He could be in a John Wick film. Because he's, and then maybe less so, where he just runs at the sniper, just yelling, going, ah, and miraculously doesn't get shot by him and then manages to take him out. That's less of a John Wick move. But it's good. I like it.
That's another thing, this film. A lot of the henchmen have got these stormtrooper, typical Bond villain henchmen vibes going on. They're terrible shots. They miss everything. They seem overly dumb in terms of like investigation and stuff. They're tricked very easily as well, so the typical henchman. There was no I guess one standout set. That's the thing that's missing. There was no real standout henchman. There was one guy that showed up a few times at Tech Penelope Cruise and had a fight with Matthew McConaughey at the end, but there was no iconic henchman, I guess. That's maybe a point off of it for its Bond replication.
You know, some Bond henchmen are just big guys, and the hitman in this just kind of falls into that category. But like, even some of the side characters I feel have a lot of personality, like the taxi driver, the guy in the red cap. He's only got a few lines, but I really like his energy. The guard on the train, where the camels are like slowly, they're jumping off the camels and leaving the camels behind, and he's eating his nuts and he's like, hang on a minute, there's three camels there now, I better do my job and guard the train and have a look. He's got a lot of personality. And the guy that sets Matthew McConaughey on the path after he finds the coin, their little exchange, like, ah, we're not that good friends, that's pretty good as well. I enjoyed that. And lots of little moments, and like even the bit, there's some like clever camera work and at the beginning, and like there's no wasted motion. So we're at a party that McConaughey's boss is at, unveiling dead king that they've found, and as we like leave the WHO doctors, they go down the stairs, and then Matthew McConaughey comes up the stairs and enters the party, and that all seems to work pretty seamlessly. There's a lot of good stuff in this.
Then why did it do so badly?
I don't know. It could be the marketing thing. It's definitely a failure of, you know, keeping the budget where it needed to be. So I don't know whose fault that is, whether it's the director's fault for not organising his set and story outline correctly, or maybe it's, you know, the legal stuff that, I don't know whether that counts towards the film's budget, but yeah, if you're being sued by the writer, just, you know, let him, give him a writing credit or something. I don't know precisely what he was suing them over, but yeah, don't lock him out of the writing room completely, because yeah, that's obviously going to be upsetting. Although the book might be bad, I don't know. That he was a prolific writer, I don't, I've not read any of his books, but maybe I'll check out Sahara and see if Dirk and Al have that sort of excellent chemistry that they do on screen, or whether that's all a thing that the actors brought to the table themselves.
I'm also looking as well, this film, as well as its lawsuit, It's got allegations of bribery. I don't know if you've seen this or not at all, but there was let's have a quick look. I mean, the budget was, yeah, bribes to the Moroccan government, some of which may have been legally questionable under American law.
Oh dear, that's not good.
Maybe, obviously, that wouldn't affect the performance of the film when it came out. That was found out afterwards. That actually came up whilst they were going through all the lawsuit stuff, and they found some documents relating to that as well.
Yeah.
Maybe there was some mishandling by the Moroccan government. Maybe they purposely made the film bomb or something.
I mean, there is like, it's not bribery, but like incentives for like different films to film in certain countries with like tax breaks and things like that. So, I mean, that's not what it sounds like was going on in this case, but yeah, I'll have to have a nosy into that and see what was going on, Chris. But yeah, that might be another reason why this film is so hard to find, because it's a Paramount film, but you had a quick look and it's not on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Well, the only places I can find this film was on Google Play or Movies, whatever it is, and then Amazon Prime have got it on there to rent for a few pounds. So, yeah, I don't know why, if this is a film that's distributed by Paramount. Maybe Paramount don't have the rights to it anymore. I'm not sure how it works. Just because they distributed it then doesn't mean they necessarily have the rights to it now and something. Maybe, I don't know, maybe certain things reverted back to the writer or something. I don't really know why. And like I said, before you mentioned it, I didn't even know this film really existed. I don't know how many people even know about this movie, or obviously it was just swept under the rug, perhaps.
Yeah, I'm not expecting this episode to do particularly well. I don't think the searchability of Sahara is going to be on many people's like, oh, I really want to hear a podcast episode about the film Sahara that came out 19 so years ago. So I don't know, but it's a film that I like and I've got a soft spot for, and I'm sure there's like loads of films like that. I know for a fact that you've got loads of them, films that I've never heard of, like The Matrix that I didn't watch. But in this case, this is a good film that I have a soft spot for, unlike The Matrix films and, you know, whatever weird horror films that you like that are bad. So
What are you doing? I don't like no bad horror films. I only enjoy the finest quality of cinema.
exactly.
But no, I understand where you're coming from. When you there's films like that when you look for them and you got the nostalgia glasses going and stuff. And like I said, it's not a bad film. It is a good action film, and it has got enjoyable characters in it, and the plot is overly ridiculous, which that's fine for these types of action films and stuff. You don't come to it necessarily for the plot. You come through it more for seeing Matthew McConaughey, big explosions and stuff like that. Yeah, that's fair. I can understand why you like the film so much, and it's a fine movie. Other than you, though, I can't think of many other people I could even recommend this to.
Well, if you like Indiana Jones or whatever, then this is sort of in there. No, I don't think comparing this to Indiana Jones does it any favors, because there are Indiana Jones always ends with like a supernatural shenanigans and stuff like that, and this is kind of like very grounded. So they find the boat, and there's no like ghost boats, or the gold isn't cursed with like the Pirates of the Caribbean like skeleton pirate ship ghost thing or anything like that. It's very Bondy. It's far-fetched, but it's not it doesn't drift into fantasy elements or anything like that. But it's a solid action film with fun bits and bobs in it. This came out sort of around the same time as like National Treasure, and that's a Disney thing, and I think that is more outlandish, like with Nicolas Cage going, we're going to steal the Declaration of Independence. So and that got a sequel, but that's less action heavy and I think maybe less fun. It's been a while since I've seen it, so I might have to backtrack on that, because I do remember enjoying National Treasure. But out of the two of them, Chris, I would have preferred to get a Sahara sequel than a National Treasure 2.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. I've never seen National Treasure,
Have
so
you
I can't back
not?
that up. But like I said, I know there's a couple of films, and I think there's a TV series on Disney Plus
Yeah.
for it now. There's one coming or whatever. So, you know, I'm going to get around. I'll watch National Treasure eventually, and then I'll see which one I would have preferred a sequel to on this.
Well, maybe we can do that next week, or we could do Civil War next week, which recently came out. It's up to you. But yeah, just to compare them, because I think Sahara fares up a little bit better than than that, because National Treasure doesn't, it has Sean Bean in it and it doesn't kill Sean Bean, so it can't even do that right, Chris, I'm afraid. As much as I love Nicolas Cage in that film, yeah, they had one job, Chris, it's to murder Sean Bean.
You know, Sean Bean does not always have to die in everything he's in, which is fair enough. But yes, National Treasure then. Let's say do that and we can compare, because I don't need a reason, but it's nice to have a reason to put National Treasure on and have a look at it. Circling back to a point earlier on, the film stuff, how you said Indiana Jones goes into sort of the fantasy, curse, alien stuff, and this doesn't. It stays semi-realistic. I thought it was going to go into a bit of a cursed fantasy type thing when there's some Matthew McConaughey, and he's looking for the boat, and he talks to some guy who's got diaries or accounts that are written a few hundred years ago. I didn't really know who this guy was, but he's writing about how the ship came through, and they called it a ghost ship, and all they found was death on it, and it made its way down. And I thought people were going to be getting sick because there was something on the ship that was leaking, either a chemical or whatever, and they thought it was going to be a like a supernatural thing. Then it turned out to be a sciencey thing. That's where I thought they were going to go. The ship was the cause of the pollution or the poisoning.
Well, I guess so, but like, you got to think of it like in the context of like, these people hadn't seen a ship like this, and its only job is to like shoot things with cannons. So if anyone did try to stop it, they'd just blow them up with cannons, and like, oh no, that's bad. And also, again, they're bringing like diseases from America, which people in Africa wouldn't have been exposed to at the time. So it might be something like that. But yeah, I did like that they did sort of link, like McConaughey could track the source of the pollution in the underground river that was spreading through the wells by finding the wreck of the ironclad. So that bit all worked out pretty well.
Everything, I will say, they do tie together everything relatively well in the film and stuff, and all that lot. Like I said, the plot is quite ludicrous, but that's fine for these type of movies.
Yeah. And there aren't any like massive like plot convenient moments or anything like that. I know people like travel vast distances too quickly. There's a guy that manages to get back to Kazim after Dirk and Al take out his guards and save Eva, and then he gets back and then they're still traveling and stuff like that. There's a few like weird editing choices, but that's I can like chalk that up to like we gotta keep moving and get on with the action. But I've got good things to say about this film all day, including about Kazim, General Kazim. He's not in it a whole lot. He's the warlord that's taken over this portion of Africa, and he's after the doctor to like stop news of this chemical pollution getting out, and he's upset by the Americans coming in and ruining his plan. And although he's not got a lot of screen time, he's got like an interesting villain quirk where he really enjoys like old firearms that have been used for various assassinations, which I think is a good counterbalance to like McConaughey's historical stuff. And he loves like firearms and stuff like that, and he's killed by like the oldest firearm you can get, which is a big cannon. So it's like he like enjoys this stuff, but he doesn't really understand it, because he would have known if he did his homework that the cannonball was going to explode.
I mean, I didn't know cannonballs exploded. I always thought I didn't know there were ones that did explode and stuff. I just assumed all of them were just, you know, big ass balls.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even know about this ironclad. I don't know anything about the American Civil War. I didn't know about this ironclad ship. So when it came into it, I didn't know if that was historically accurate or not, or whether, because when that appeared, I was immediately getting Wild Wild West vibes and stuff, like a steampunk aesthetic, because it was a steamboat with all this thick iron around it. And I had no idea if it was historically accurate or not. And today I learned it was.
Yeah. You learn something new every day, Chris, and that's good. Yeah. And the scene where it just floats off to become a ghost ship is pretty cool. So yeah, it all works out very well, and yeah, it's so good. And yeah, the Admiral just casually, the guy from Jurassic Park 3, just casually like asking the government to assassinate this rich French guy by making him drink polluted, poisoned water in a fancy restaurant. Just, ah, beautiful irony, Chris.
That scene took me by surprise. When it showed him walking and the waiter carrying this bottle of mineral water, and it went to the French guy, and I was like, oh yeah, he escaped, of course. And I was like, here's his comeuppance. I thought they were going to arrest him. No, they just assassinated him straight out. I mean, I'm sure they could have linked him to it. I didn't really think there'd be any need to actually assassinate the guy as well, like undercover agent work or whatever. So, but see what I mean? That's the film jumping around again between archaeology stuff to James Bond-esque type things and everything in between.
The French guy might not die. He might be able to get treatment because he is a rich person. So diseases can be cured with money, Chris. As we all know, you inject enough money into your blood becomes money. Diseases can't kill money, so you live. That's how money works, isn't it? You just inject it into you.
Clearly. No, I don't think this guy's going to survive it because, all right, they poison him with the polluted water. He gets sick. He gets medical treatment. He survives. Then what? They go and arrest him afterwards or they just keep poisoning him? It's not going to work. If they poisoned him, it's definitely going to kill him. I get the feeling there was no cure yet for this disease. Well,
Although there was, because in like the roundup, they're like, oh, who have devised an antitoxin for the disease? So yeah, he'll probably get back. But I do like the idea that the CIA just keep poisoning this guy with polluted water everywhere he goes, just like every time. And he's like, oh, and he just becomes a hermit, terrified of water. That's funny though. It deserves him right for being a pollutant guy. Good idea to like use solar panels and clean energy to get rid of all of this stuff, but bad idea to just store it underground when you can't be asked to dispose of it properly. Bad.
Yeah, in a way, was he even really a villain? He was a guy who was doing this business stuff, and he didn't even know it was leaking into it. When Penelope Cruz's character tells him about it, he's like, oh, don't be ridiculous, that can't be happening. And afterwards, he's like, oh, crap, actually, maybe she's correct. So was he even really the villain? Or was he just in the wrong place at the wrong time? Was Matthew McConaughey the real villain in this? Dragging him into all this nonsense and stuff. This guy was just trying to do his business. And like I said, he's using clean energy to dispose of toxins and vaporizing them in a harmless way and that lot. And okay, some sand cracked some of his panels here to store a little bit. He didn't know he was going to leak into the earth, did he?
Chris, doing the bad thing, even though you don't know it's the bad thing through ignorance, is no excuse, Chris. He's still not being good. And then he goes one step further. If he'd like held up his hands and like gone into that secret vault and like, oh shit, all the cans are leaking toxins everywhere, oh, this is actually bad, I'm so sorry, Penelope Cruz, I'll get on this right away, I'll stop being a bad man, then yeah, sure. But then he tries to blow up the whole plant with like prisoners and political, you know, hostages in there. So yeah, that's not good. So that would tip him into villainy, Chris.
Well, that's not really villainy. That's just typical rich business people stuff, isn't it? When they find out there's something going wrong, Chris? They try to claim ignorance, and then they think, my ignorance claim's not going to work. I need to cover this up, because no rich people are going to own up and say, yes, it's my fault, and lose their money, are they? So really, is he really the bad guy in all this, or is he just a normal business person? That's the real question you should ask yourself.
I mean, real business people can be villains in real life, Chris, so...
I know.
Yes is the answer. Is definitely the answer. Do you want to make that same argument for the warlord, Chris?
Generally? No, see, that. Okay, that's fair enough. That guy is a bad guy. All right. He's not a nice person. That's fair enough. And he's... Then you got the leader of, like, the rebels, if you like. I don't know. It's a civil war that's going on in this country. So you got the other side, and guess they're the good guys because they helped Matthew McConaughey and everything. So, but then if the warlord had helped Matthew McConaughey, would he have been the good guy instead?
If it had gone, oh, damn that French bastard, I knew he was being naughty, I'll sort this out right away with my expensive gun, and I'll commission rounds of like $50 to shoot him.
It's all about perspective, isn't it, really, who the real villains are. All I'm saying is Matthew McConaughey, if he had not done this treasure hunting and got involved in all of this, I'm sure everything would have been resolved without his help,
and the world wouldn't have been polluted to death in 6 months.
No, of course not. And then we would have got a sequel then, because then it would have been like a Fallout type situation or something.
Yeah, because all the fish have died and everybody's like panicking because there's no clean water. Because it's all full of red algae and radiation and chemical goopiness.
Exactly. You know, we're never going to know, because the treasure hunters overstepped their boundaries and got involved in affairs in other countries.
Yeah, as they always do, Chris. Do we blame Indiana Jones as well for stopping the Nazis?
Indiana Jones never stops anybody. He just he's always just there, and then he's act, you know, the plot will always resolve itself without his input anyway.
Yeah, you can't say that about this film though. They do actually have, you know, a purpose. They put that nuclear waste in a museum where it belongs.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Okay, they did well. I would have liked more of the archaeology stuff in this, perhaps. That would have been nice. Like when they got the tomb up in that lot, I thought they were going to crack the tomb open at the start of the film. We don't even get to see any of that stuff. So for a film that's meant to be with these treasure hunter and archaeologists or whatever, well, they're not even archaeologists, are these treasure hunters, they don't do much of the actual treasure hunting. And the few scenes we do get of it, which are fair enough, they help to move the plot forward and stuff. But you say it was balanced out, but I think the treasure hunting stuff was overshadowed much more by the, you know, poison plot.
Yeah, and I think that is the main plot of it, because that's the life and death, more higher stakes scenario than like our, because they're not chasing anyone to find the gold. They're not racing like a Belloc type guy, and it's just some gold. So, like, it's not like a cursed weapon that General Kazim can use to melt everyone. I suppose if he like killed them and got hold of some gold, that would make him more powerful, but he doesn't even know it's there, so it's fine from like that point of view. So I think maybe like labeling this as like a treasure film, even though like the main guys are like treasure hunters, probably didn't do this film any favors. But then I would like to see them like doing their job and like chasing other archaeologists or like grave robbers to certain shipwrecks and things like that, because that would be cool. I would like to see them like doing their job and finding old stuff, because they're good characters. I want to spend time with them, like everyone on that boat, like the nerd guy that they like send off to go and tell Sandecker and the Admiral and all that shady stuff. It's good. It's got a good dynamic.
Unfortunately, we don't get as much of that the other stuff. And again, I read the description for the film or something like that. And what you read this description, it says, follows a treasure hunter who partners with a WHO doctor to find a lost American Civil War ironclad warship in a Sahara desert. So
no mention.
You think it's going to be that, and then it's all this poison stuff comes in.
No mention of the diseasey stuff, which
no, nothing.
No. But that is the more important plot thread. I'd rather stop the disease than, you know, find some southern gold.
Well, I suppose so. But like I said, all in all, though, the film was not what I thought it was going to be. And that necessarily wasn't a bad thing, because I still ended up enjoying the movie for what it was. Obviously, you loved the film and that lot, but I don't think I can see myself going back to rewatch this anytime soon.
Well, you can borrow my copy of the DVD if you ever want to watch it again, Chris. So, yeah, you're welcome to it. Look, that's the DVD. It's delightful. Very orange cover. But, yeah. WeCanSurvive@gmail.com or tweet us @WeCanSurvive if you've got any thoughts on this cracking adventure quote from the Daily Star, and a superbly entertaining and thrilling from the Daily Mirror, which is the quotes on the back of the DVD cover. All contains moderate action violence, though, Chris. Not suitable for anyone under the age of 12, so, yeah, be warned about that. Next week, then, shall we do the double bill of National Treasure and see how they compare?
I mean, I'm interested now, so yes, we're going to have to... Slot Natural Treasure in there.
All right, no worries. Looking forward to that. Chris, you can enter the show.
Well, thank you to everybody who listened to We Could Survive That. Your survival guide to the movie is going to see you next week for National Treasure. But until then, keep on surviving and goodbye.